God, that we may live through day to day.
By the gentle waters, you will safely lead me in green pastures.
Tonight, so way to go. Go over to Habakkuk, page 604 if you need it. Just kidding, it's probably different for you. If you don't understand what Habakkuk is, you might think it's Habakkuk. I don't know what other way you can pronounce it. But Habakkuk. Let's go over there. And I started this message last week. Found out that they were taking bets up in the sound booth to see how much of the message I'd get through. I don't know who won. I think Carlton, great job. What did you win? Maybe some of those atomic fireballs up there. But Barry gave me an interesting book to maybe study out of. He wanted me to preach from Song of Solomon next. I'm not sure if I'm going to go that route, but he seemed really excited. So anyway, no? Oh, the boss says no. Wherever he leads, right? Habakkuk. I've been so pumped about this that I almost started jumping the gun on Wednesday night in youth group. I got into one of those rants, I guess you could say. But it was a nice rant, wouldn't you say? No? I just got involved in just the thought process And then all of a sudden, it was all correlating with Habakkuk, and then I realized how much God was working about with that in my life. And this is so potent as far as our lives here today. You say, well, this is the guy that we don't even know how to pronounce his name. Whatever pastor says, it goes, right? But how does this relate to me? It relates everything to you because God placed it in here for you. And we get to look at it and understand how to live our lives from His Word. He gives the instructions. So when you see this and see only a holy God and how this relates to missions conference, and I like the different songs that we were singing tonight, send the light around the corner, around the world. You know, the song from this morning, people need Jesus. People really do need Jesus. Do you agree with that? I mean, it's kind of why we're having a missions conference. It's not because I was bored and needed something to do. So we need to focus on missions. And I would really like for you to think of it this way. What kind of expectations do you place on our missionaries? And the fact that we've got three missionary families coming in, one that's already been on the field, one that they're going to the country that Mr. Shavi actually grew up in. I mean, he's from Uruguay. That's where they live. They're coming to America to raise support. And then another one is a brand new couple trying to raise support. I think they're around 20% of their support. And here we are. And they say, well, if we're going to support you, I've got a list of expectations that I want to make sure that you follow. If you're going to get my money. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe we should take it a step back. God's money. What do I desire for these missionaries to do? What do I expect out of them? Well, they're supposed to start churches. And those churches are supposed to start churches. And they should have at least 37 by year 5. So they can come back and report to us all the amazing things that they did. We're on year 36. How many churches have we planted in our area? Huh. Interesting thought process. And why would we plant churches in our area? Why would we revitalize churches that are hurting, that are stagnant, that need some oomph? Did your children ever need oomph? Go make your bed. Okay. They ever need a little fire under the tail? Did you ever use that term, that phrase? A little fire under the tail? You know, even though we don't have tails, we don't believe in that, okay? But yet, I got that quite a bit growing up. It was either that or the corner, and I got so bored in there that I started peeling the wallpaper. And then I got in more trouble, but anyway, you need a little oomph. I mean, does Grace Baptist Church need a little oomph? Because we serve a holy God. Why do I do what I do? Why did I come here tonight? Well, they had a meal. I heard it was hot dogs, and I just, what else am I going to do with my Sunday evening? I mean, there's nothing on TV anymore. Football's over. You think God wanted you to come tonight? Now, before you entered those doors, did you ask God, what do you want from me tonight as I enter these doors? What do you want from me tonight? Who do you want me to minister to tonight? Did you ask yourself that? Or were some of you maybe so frustrated with all the things that are going on around you that you're consumed by that? And you walk in with your frustrations. We start sounding like Tim Allen and all of his grunts and groans. You're distracted by that. You know, Habakkuk was frustrated. I don't know if you remember some of the points. I know you all have slept since then. But you know, he started out with verses 1 through 4. And he says, God, how long? How long am I going to have to deal with all these problems in front of me? All this immorality, all this iniquity, and the justice system isn't even legit anymore. I mean, this is your law that you presented to us. This is from you. This is your word. This is your commandments. It's supposed to reflect you. How long do I have to deal with it going the opposite direction? And then God says, I've got this. Are you okay when God says, I've got this? Are you okay with that? So I think we have a struggle with that as Americans, because we've got this. I have manifest destiny. Challenge me. You know, God says, I've got this, and then He presents a plan that Habakkuk was not ready for. He was not prepared for this. And he goes in and he says, listen, Babylon's going to come in. They're going to take over. They're bigger, better, badder than you. And guess what? They're worse off than you. So, that's what I've got. Now, how would you respond to that? I mean, that's kind of where we left off at the end of the sermon. How would you respond to that? Well, you probably responded a lot to it, and just the political things that's going on in America here today, some of the religious things that's going on in America today, you probably responded to quite a bit of it, and the frustrations that's going on all around you, and maybe even some of the bills that have been placed up in Illinois. You know, can I add to your sermon from this morning? I was just waiting. Thanks for the permission. I was just waiting for this application. You know, you found Elimelech moving from a place that it seemed like everything was going wrong. And he never consulted God. Does Illinois have everything going wrong? Do we sometimes make plans without ever consulting God? Do we tell our children plans without ever consulting God? This is a thought process. Just a thought process of how I need to be focused on the days ahead. How bad does it need to get before we need to transplant? Or does God want the light that's here to transplant? Does He want to be able to shine where He placed the light? Because let me ask you this. Here we have missionaries that we support, that we send halfway across the world, and yet their governmental situation is not very good. We've got the Schultzes over in Africa, and they keep sending letters to us, emails. And what does it say? Well, the wife's holding down the fort while we've got Allison. You know, that was the difficulty that they were dealing with just a few weeks ago. And we're sending all these prayers over and keep going. Keep up with all the things that God's called you to over there. And what did he keep saying? He kept saying, my wife's holding down the fort while there's people raiding, stealing, killing. They're going to raise our utility bill by 200%. Oh, you mean I'm paying for people to send them over to a rougher situation than what I'm dealing with here today? Oh, it can't be any rougher than Illinois. Oh, please. Didn't you listen this morning? We have got it so easy compared to so many. We are free to worship. We don't have to hide. We have the biggest budget. You go over to China, they don't have the budget that we do. They don't have the resources, the freedom, the resources to just go on the internet and find whatever you want and to be able to email and say whatever you want. You don't have to code your messages. And yet, what is holding us back from being the fastest growing Christianity in all the world? Us. Great answer. Wait, do we serve the same God that our missionaries do? Only a holy God. See, he's frustrated. God says, I've got this. And the same God that had it then still has it now. And we can trust in that. And guess what it goes on? And Habakkuk responds and he goes into verse 12 of chapter 1. And here we find this point. It says, are you sure? Don't we say that to God so often? Don't we ask him that? Are you sure? God, how long do I have to deal with this? God says, I've got this, right? And then Habakkuk, are you sure? He said, I don't find that within the scriptures. It does not say that in the KJV language. Okay? It is summarized. As you see in verse 12, what's it say? It says, art thou not from everlasting? O Lord, my God, mine Holy One, we shall not die. Because he's automatically thinking, Babylon's going to come in, he's going to take us out. All of us are going to die. You say, wait a minute, aren't you our God? Aren't we your people? How can this happen? And he's resorting back to God's character. How many times did David in the Psalms resort back to God's character? He grasped onto the truth of who God was, his mercy, his holiness, his love, his care, his provision, his protecting, his sovereignty, all these things that he's reaching onto. He's saying, God, you are all these things. I'm holding on to these things. Would you please turn this around? What do you think Habakkuk's doing? God, you are holy. You are everlasting. We are your people. We can't die. This doesn't make sense. It says, O Lord, thou hast ordained them for judgment, and Almighty God, thou hast established them for correction. These are the ones that you're coming for correction and judgment upon us. It says, thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore, lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue. When the wicked devoureth the man that is more righteous than he. Do you see where Habakkuk's gone with this? I mean, what does he do? He complains about the people he's around, God's people. And then God provides a solution. And then he says, wait, that's not good enough because they're worse off than we are. How can you watch an evil people that's more evil than us? Wait, is there a more evil? Is there a worser sin? Yes, I just made that up. Sorry, style. Is there really? I mean, you get the point. Is there worse sins? Well, that's the way that we view them. Then all of a sudden we become self-righteous, don't we? Well, if you compare me to the drug lord down the street across the tracks, I am a saint. I'm not as bad as that person. Really? How did God describe us? We were enemies of Him. But God commendeth His love towards us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Oh. He didn't say, well, there's a lesser Christian, and there's a more righteous Christian. It just calls us plain old sinners and enemies of the cross. And yet he said, here's a gift. Here it is, right here. You see where he's coming from? I mean, this is where we go. This is what we talk about. Well, we're a Christian nation. We shouldn't have to deal with this kind of a problem. Oh, please, when did we start looking at ourselves so high that we didn't think that certain things could happen to us? Because we believe that we get to control the situation. If I pray, the genie will come out and boom, it's going to happen the way that I wish. What's he say? He says, you're holy. You're everlasting. It says in verse 14, "And make us men as the fishes of the sea, as the creeping things that have no ruler over them." And so it's kind of chaotic. It says, so you're making us all just like fish in the sea, and we're just going around wherever we want, and there's no ruler over them, and no protector. Verse 15, "They take up all of them with the angle." It's a way to catch. It's a trap there. "They catch them in their net and gather them in their drag. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice unto their net and burn incense unto their drag, because by them their portion is fat and their meat is plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nations?" He's saying, listen, these people, we're just like fish in the sea. These people are so powerful. Is this where you put them? And here they are using their nets. They're using their fishing poles, whatever it is, to catch these fish. And they're so into what they're doing that they're actually worshiping the nets and the poles they have in order to catch these fish. I mean, have you ever listened to a fisherman before? I mean, they start talking about the models and the brands of the fishing poles. And, well, this is what does this, and it's got this kind of a pole, and this is the kind of string that I have. Have you ever listened to that? I don't understand it. It's about like a rocket scientist trying to explain formulas to me. I mean, there's a fish. I need to catch it. Let's bring it in. I'm just that dumb, okay? All right? I mean, you go spear fishing. Has anybody been spear fishing before? It's kind of fun. But I am so simple. I mean, everybody else in Minnesota, I mean, that's all they have to do in the wintertime. They go out and put a shanty on the ice. They drill a hole and they wait for a fish to come by. Yeah, there's a good one. You know, they put heaters in their shanties. Has anybody ever done this before? I mean, they think this is crazy, don't you? But this is what there's like all kinds of shanties all over the place. And I went with my father-in-law. All of a sudden, his hobby became spearfishing. And so he says, let's go have some quality guy time. Okay. So I go out there with him, and we sit in there for hours. You know how many fish we came home with? And you know the whole entire time what I was thinking of? I am allergic to these stinking things. I can't even eat them. What am I doing? You say, well, you just don't like them. You're not really allergic. I am literally allergic to fish. I like them. They just don't like me. And he's explaining, well, this is the type of the spear that you use for this, and this is the type of line, and this is the type of bait, and this is... There is so much into these things. I mean, just go over to Walmart and look at all the stuff. And then you pro fishermen, you're like, Walmart? Who goes to Walmart? I go over to Bass Pro. That's my vacation. I go and study the fish. I go online and study. And, oh, man, it's amazing. I mean, where am I going with this? They are so into what they are doing and how powerful they are. They have conquered the world. That is their thought process. This is what Habakkuk is saying. They are conquering, and they're not worshiping you, God. They're worshiping their stuff in order to conquer the world. And this formula, 2 + 2 does not equal 4. That's what is going on in his mind. This does not make sense. And sometimes in our frustration, we lose our humility, don't we? What does he say next in chapter 2, verse 1? "I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved." You're going to tell me what's next, and I'm already ready to give a response. Are you ever like that in your relationship with your spouse? They're saying something to you. This is when men get in really big trouble. Okay, they mention the first thing and you're like, I already know how to fix this. Listen, they don't want you to fix it. Get over your fixing, okay? All right, they just want you to listen. All right? That's what it comes down to. And us guys, we really don't understand it, because it could take this conversation down to 30 seconds and I could get back to whatever game that I was watching or a paper that I was reading, or for some of you, Clash of Clans. I mean, you just like, boom, I got to get back to it. She's talking to me. I could fix this yesterday. This is Habakkuk. He's already ready for a response. He's not even listening, really. Do we ever get so frustrated that we lose our humility? What does it say? Be still and know that He is God. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall rise and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Teach me, Lord, to wait. Huh. But yet here he is. Are you sure, God? Are you sure this is how it works? Are you sure this is the best route? You know, there's a lot of people out there that are saying the same thing about salvation when he says there is no other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved. And yet there's so many people out there saying, are you sure, God? Are you sure this works? Are you positive? I mean, he's just a man, isn't he? He came to die. Are you sure he rose again? Are you sure he has the power to conquer sin and death? Are you sure, God? So many people get caught up. Believe it be foolishness. If you're here tonight and that's what's stopping you, let me ask you this. Do you love it when your children question what you know to be true? Does the tool ever question its maker? What is truth? What is right? No. What God says is true. He is God. How do we deal with that? Well, He gives it. You go on the next point, and I titled this, the just shall live by faith. See, we try to box up God and our sets of limitations of how He's supposed to work. And He says, this is how you're supposed to work. This is how I work. You go on to verse 2, it says, and the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon the tables that he may run that readeth it. Go write this down. Does anybody ever have to tell you to do that? I'm not going to just state this to you. I want you to write it down so whoever grasps this can get it done fast, can understand it fast. I want you to make it simple. This is how it's going to work. It says, for the vision is yet for an appointed time. But at the end, it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it. Wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Have you ever been in a vehicle with a child? Are we there yet? No. We're still driving. 3 seconds later, are we there yet? Do you see our destination? Do you see Grandma and Papa's house? Did you see that we just left our house? I mean, does that work out? And you know, that could be quite annoying over a 9-hour time period, can't it? And my in-laws used to live in Minnesota. You know how hard I prayed for them not to live in Minnesota anymore? When you got kids, that time... it turned out to be like 17 hours. And they weren't in southern Minnesota. They were in northern Minnesota. So it doesn't matter if you're July 4th. It's probably going to have snow on the ground. And I know that might be a little exaggerated, but it's like, why do I have to deal with this? God, would you just please transplant them? I know this might not be your will, but God made it happen. It was so unique how he made it happen. It was great, and I felt like I was a little bit selfish in the moment, but it was wonderful that I did not have to for 17 hours get told, are we there yet? Do you know how many times we ask God, are we there yet? Are you coming yet? Are you going to get this done yet? Are you going to judge these people yet? Are you going to take them off the face of this earth yet? What's he say? It's coming. I'm not lying. He's not slack concerning his promises as some men think he is. What he says will happen. And it says, this might not be in your appointed time. What does it say? For the vision is yet for an appointed time. My time. God's time. That is what he is saying. You have to have faith. Why? Because he says so. It says in verse 4, behold his soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him. Those who are lifted up right now, and Babylon was going to be lifted up to take over Israel. Okay, they are not upright. That's how they live. They are wrong. But the just shall live by his or her faith. That's how we live. Have you ever heard that point before made? Now, Paul talks about it a few times. He talks about it in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 11. You want to run over to that verse here real quick? It says, but that no man is justified by the law in the sight of God. It is evident, for the just shall live by faith. Wait a minute. The Old Testament is being repeated by the New Testament? Yeah. It all works together. Romans 1:17, what does it say there? For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. If you want to see the righteousness of God, watch the people that have faith in him. It'll be evident from those who actually live out this faith. It's not by sight, it's by faith. Because when we look around us, we have struggles reasoning. And that's why it says, trust the Lord with all thine heart and lean not into thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path. That's what he's calling us to do. I wonder when this church was started, and this was started in a basement, okay? I wonder if it was reasonable. Or I wonder if it took a little bit of faith. And if somebody was meeting in my basement, which I don't have anymore, I wonder how many times you would ask the question, did we do the right thing? This doesn't seem as easy as we wanted it to be. It's not really taken on the fashion that we thought it would. Well, what is he calling us to? Live by faith. He goes on and he works through this passage. As you see in verse 5, it talks more about this and the fact that, yea, also because he transgresses by wine, he is a proud man, neither keepeth at home, who enlargeth his desire as hell and is as death, and cannot be satisfied, but gathereth unto him all nations and heapeth unto him all people. These barbarians, Babylon, okay, going in and they're drunk. They're following after their own sin and their own desires, and their desires as big as and as large as death. And you say, what are you talking about? How many people die? How many people go to hell? Do more go to hell than go to heaven? What is narrow the way to heaven, isn't it? Wide is the gate for those who walk into the pits of hell. You say this is like a huge black hole. Their desire is just huge. It says in verse 6, shall not all these take up a parable against him and a taunting proverb against him and say, woe to him that increaseth that which is not his. How long to him that ladeth himself with thick clay. All of a sudden we go into a series of woes and he's talking about Babylon. He's saying, listen, I've got this. This is my plan. You're just going to have faith in me. This is what's going to happen. Listen, woe to them that all of a sudden try to take on so much that aren't theirs. And he likens it, it talks about thick clay. You know what the term behind that is? Debt. Oh, here he goes again. Mr. Financial Coach. Do you know how much debt our country has? Well, it's our politicians' fault. And therefore, you know what? I found out is that the politicians are just a representation of its people. You know how many millions, billions of dollars are racked up into student loans and car payments? What was the average car payment? I think it was up to like 500 some dollars a month over an 84 month period. That's on average. So what does that mean about averages? Well, there's some low ones and there's some high ones, isn't there? And you know, some people, they go off and they get their vehicle and then they turn it back in and just throw the old debt on the new debt. And then they use that vehicle for a little while and then they take the vehicle back in and they throw the old debt on the new debt. No, that's not a nice thing to do. Because guess what? The time of reckoning is at hand. And guess what? All of a sudden the coronavirus hits and the stock markets plunge and everybody's freaking out. Why? Because they have so much debt, they don't know how to handle it. Well, I have so much stuff. Do you really own that stuff? Or does the bank own it and you just get to use it? And we're overcome with it. Okay, get off your high horse, Pastor. I've been there. And I praise the Lord just this past Thursday. You know, it's really good accountability when you're leading a financial peace class for your own debt. Just this past Thursday, we paid off our last dollar of our non-mortgage debt. You know how freeing that was? I've got my house and that's it. And I'm going to pay that off way sooner than what the banks want me to pay it off. I mean, just when you come into this and you understand what is happening, he's saying, are we just going on a financial cruise here? No. Understand that they are building up all this stuff that they cannot take care of. Our country, are you worried about the financial situation of our country? How long can we go? How long can we deal with this type of stuff when it just keeps building and building and building? Can we handle even the interest of the payments? When you're talking about this and what's happening here, it's saying, woe unto them that have this thick clay. That's how tough it is. Get buried by a thick clay. Try to dig yourself out of it. Try to lift up. Out of the thick clay. It says, shall they not rise up suddenly that shall bite thee and awake thee, that thou shalt vex thee, and thou shalt be for booties unto them, because thou hast spoiled many nations. All the remnant of the people shall spoil thee. because of men's blood and for the violence of the lands of the city and of all that dwell therein. He's saying, here you are, you're building all these things that you can't take care of. You're pushing yourself beyond your own limits. And guess what? Those people that you take over, it's going to come and bite you in the backside. Woe to them that take on more than they can handle. It goes on in another one, and it starts talking in verse 9. Woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. Thou hast consulted shame to thy house by cutting off many people, and hast sinned against thy soul. For the stone shall cry out of the wall, and the beam out of the timber shall answer it. Oh, man. What does that mean? They're building their house from things that they covet. It's evil, and they'll do anything in order to get that. And all of a sudden, every piece of that house will cry out. There's no honor in it. It's only shame. Shame. It goes on and states another woe in verse 12 through 14. Woe to him that buildeth the town with blood, and establisheth the city by iniquity. Behold, it is not of the Lord of hosts. The people shall labor in the very fire. The necessity, I mean, fire was a very basic thing, and they were laboring hard for this. This is what it was talking about. And just in this very thing, and the people shall weary themselves for their very vanity. It'll be empty. They will weary themselves. And it's all empty. All this progress that they're supposedly happening is so empty, and they will be so worn out for it. For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Saying, what's happening here? They are so self-focused. They're building up for themselves this empty house. But full of woes. They're creating an empire that they can't deal with, that they can't handle. It's built on blood. It's built on coveting. And he's saying, just you wait. The glory of the Lord will cover this earth. Not the glory of Babylon. Are they still an empire? Babylon? Or is God still on the throne? It goes on and it says, woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink, and that puttest thy bottle to him, and makest him drunk also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness, on their shame. Let's get this guy drunk and make him look like an idiot. That's what it's talking about. And it goes on and it says, thou art filled with shame for glory. Drink thou also, and let thy foreskin be uncovered in the fact of the uncircumcision, of they were not set apart for God. Let's uncover the fact that they are not set apart. They are not God's people. And it goes on and says, the cup of the Lord's right hand shall be turned unto thee, and shameful spewing shall be on thy glory. They'll end up vomiting themselves. They wanted to bring shame on their buddy. And they ended up bringing shame on themselves. Picture somebody who goes off to a party, and supposedly they're going to have fun. And they end up drinking and getting their buddy to drink. And maybe he'll do some dumb stuff. Right? And then guess what happens? They both look like idiots. They both feel like idiots. Why? Because they're sitting by a toilet, the ivory throne, right? In the morning, and feeling totally dumb. Is this fun? Is this fun? And you say, yeah, woe on those alcoholics. How many things do we run after? Not just drink. Man, I really, really need to think about, and the whole factor of what Christians think is okay with drinking nowadays. I've always likened drinking to be a snake. And I'm sorry, Steve. I just despise snakes. My first thought is they're going to bite me. So I will walk away, maybe run away screaming like a little girl. I am not going to get close to it. I've watched what it's done to relatives of mine, to friends of mine who have gotten dumb, who have forsaken their families, their children, their marriages for the sake of alcohol. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And I've watched it, and I've never seen anybody grow in God with alcohol. Never. Never. So why do we say, oh, it's okay to socially drink? Please. Let's go play around with some of these other addictions like porn. It's not that big of a deal. What about spending? I was already talking about that. All these things that are chains, and we willingly, as free Christians, free because of the blood of Jesus Christ, walk right back in and put those chains right back on us. How does that make any sense? And we glory in those things. We get excited about those things, don't we? I had some control over my life and I went and did whatever I wanted to do. Just wait. The whole earth will be filled with God's glory. Try to bring shame onto somebody else and you end up shaming yourself. You bring other people in with your influences of running to your sin, whether it be anger, whether it be gossip, whether it be complaining, whatever it might be, that this every sin that is out there is bondage, and we cannot lessen these sins and heighten these sins. Let's get away from the sin. Let's look into the author and finisher of our faith. Here it is. Stop excusing me, saying, woe to those people who be so consumed by all that they can do and bringing attention to themselves and glory to themselves. Woe to these people in verse 18 to 20. What profiteth the graven image that the maker thereof hath graven it? The molten image and a teacher of lies that the maker of his work trusteth therein to make dumb idols. Here we are lifting up these things that is created by mankind, and we lift them up to be false idols. And he's saying, woe to these people who are making other people trust in them. Verse 19, woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it. Why do we worship things that aren't God? Why do we lift them up? Why do they become so important to us? What's it say there in verse 20? The Lord in His holy temple, that all the earth keep silence before Him. Why do you think there'll be silence? I think partly it'll be just because of the whole majesty of God. I think we'll be so overwhelmed by His majesty that we'll just be silent. But there's also the fact that there is so much that I could have done, but I got so distracted with myself. I wish I would have done more. And obviously I can't get through the rest of Habakkuk, so let's close it off with this. Here we are in Missions Conference coming up this next week. And I challenge you with this. What's holding you back from being the greatest potential for our God? You say, oh, so are we going into performance-based Christianity? No, we're going into worship-based Christianity. How about that? I mean, what's holding back our church from going out and planting other churches in Illinois? Wait a minute. If we started planting churches in Illinois and revitalizing dead churches in Illinois, what would happen to Illinois? Wouldn't the light spread? Wouldn't we go and shine another candle? Wouldn't we light on? I mean, do you remember our candlelight service? And when people would go over and light their candle from another person's candle. What would happen if our church became the light of Christian County? You think it's interesting that we're called Christian County? I think that's very interesting. Maybe Christian County can resemble that name. A great place to live because of the gospel of Jesus Christ is being proclaimed. And Grace Baptist Church is very different than the world. They're unique. They're calling on, they're taking on the resemblance of our holy God, our amazing God, our everlasting God. And we have to live by faith. What would it take? What kind of thought process would it take? What kind of sacrifices would it take? Would I have to say no to myself? When I need to come a little bit more often to gather with His people. I think pastors always wrestle with this conundrum. There are hundreds of people that call Grace Baptist Church their church, and yet we do not have hundreds of people meeting every time the church doors are open. Is that a conundrum for anybody else? Is that crazy for me to think about that? I mean, and it's not just Grace. It's every church out there. Well, Grace is my church. Where have you been? Well, I've just been tired. Join the rest of us. Because our bodies are affected by sin and the curse of this world, and we're supposed to be longing for God, which is supposed to be our rest. Right? Isn't that the truth? We're all degrading. Our bodies are not made anymore for this earth. It's made for heaven. I mean, just that's what we're made for. To long for Him. To be excited for that destination, looking into the author and finisher of our faith and not getting so distracted by all those things that are around us. Go and give the gospel. You got problems with millennials? Go and give them the gospel. Millennials, you got problems with baby boomers? Go and give them the gospel. For crying out loud, stop complaining about everybody else's generation and give the gospel. You want to complain about our public school systems? Go give the gospel. Is anything else going to fix it? What if year 36 for us was the year that everything just sparked? And we acted like this was a church plant and just reached out. Everybody doing something for the glory of God. Come and behold Him, the one and the only. Forever a holy God. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I thank You so much. Oh, this is just so overwhelming, this passage and the scripture, just everything that You presented here. And it's just, it's gripped me, and I need it. I think we all need it. And Lord, I'm excited about fellowshipping with Your people around food and stories and history of all that You've presented, and through Your mercy and Your grace, we've been able to do this. But Lord, there might be some people here tonight that has never, never had faith in You for their salvation. And I just ask that You would help them to see that here tonight. Lord, help our church. We need You. Help us not get comfortable with the way that we are, but we just long for You and Your word to be spread all over the nations. That Your glory spread. That Your holiness spread. through the gospel. God, you've given us the resources. God, give us the passion. God, help us. In Jesus' name, amen. See you.